This episode is brought to you by the Arvada Center, because they're kicking off their summer concert series in June. Relax under the stars at the Arvada Center's outdoor amphitheater and take in acts like Melissa Etheridge, Big Richard, Tower of Power, Preservation Hall Jazz Band, The Spin Doctors, and so much more. Concerts are scheduled for June through September. You can find a whole schedule of events and get your tickets today at arvadacenter.org. That's arvadacenter.org. Today on CityCast Denver, we have something very special for you. Yesterday, in front of a live audience of city council members, transportation industry insiders, and a good number of CityCast Denver listeners, I moderated a panel on the next big thing coming to shake up our public transit system, BRT, aka Bus Rapid Transit, aka better, faster, and more reliable buses. So thanks to Stuart, Erica, and everyone at Transportation Solutions for inviting us back, and please enjoy this great intro to BRT. Today is Friday, April 26th. I'm Bree Davies, and here's what Denver's talking about. Thank you all for being here. I'm going to introduce the panel really quick, do sort of an intro, because we are recording this live for the CityCast Denver podcast, which is what I am the host of. 5 days a week here in Denver, we cover all things Denver, including transit is a huge topic for us. Our listeners really love to hear about it, and we get awesome experts on the show every day, including this panel that we have right now. As Stuart mentioned, this is our third time hosting this panel with Transportation Solutions, for the Road Ahead Conference. So there might be some redundancy here in introducing these folks, but we're basically introducing this idea of BRT to a lot of people who are going to be hearing about it for the first time. So we're talking specifically about the BRT on Colfax is what a lot of our questions will focus on, but Katie will bring your expertise in as someone that's in the midst of it. Let me just introduce everybody. Unfortunately, too, I want to make a note. We had a gentleman who was a 24-year RTD bus driver, Ron Short, who was supposed to join us today. Unfortunately, he was sick, which I'm sad about because we've got the planner, we've got the people behind it, but then we've also got Jacob's going to be here talking as a rider, and then we had a driver. So unfortunately, he's not here, but I think this conversation will be robust no matter what. Let's get started, though. Jacob, you're the current executive director of the National Organizations for Youth Safety, aka NOISE, a national youth-powered organization positioning marginalized youth to lead in addressing transportation equity and mobility justice. You're also the regional leader of the Global Youth Coalition for Road Safety and a member of the Denver Mayor's Pedestrian Advisory Committee. Jacob Smith, welcome. And then Ryan Knowles, you are the Bus Rapid Transit Program Manager for CDOT Region 1, which means you're responsible for developing and delivering BRT projects on state highways in the Denver metro area in partnership with Dr. Cog, RTD, the City and County of Denver, and other local partners. Hello, Ryan. And then Katie Roth, you serve as the Director of Arterial Bus Rapid Transit at Metro Transit in Minneapolis-St. Paul, Minnesota, and you are passionate about the role of faster, better bus service can play in supporting thriving communities. Katie, welcome.
Thanks, Bree.
So, like I said, our listeners are very interested in the transit conversation, Ryan, and I wanted to start with a listener question that we got, because I think a lot of Denverites are thinking about this as BRT construction looms this summer. We get asked this question a lot, but why are we not just rebuilding the old streetcar system?
That's a good question. I would say that the old streetcar system was, you know, an amazing system back in the day. To build it today would be a really, really expensive thing to do. And, you know, we see, and I think Katie can attest to this, that buses are kind of the workhorses of our systems in many of our American cities. And, you know, elevating the bus experience and making the bus work better and more, have it be more reliable, have it move faster, is really something that we can do in a much shorter time frame. I think building, you know, massive streetcar systems could be something that could take a long time and could cost a lot of money.
Yeah, I think that's the key thing here is it costs a lot of money. takes more time. It's like a bigger infrastructure project. And if we want to make this change, we've got to do it in a way that's more affordable and faster. Katie, did you all have any sort of, it's sort of this like lost thing we think about in Denver. Remember when we had this beautiful streetcar? And there's just a lot of nostalgia about it, but the reality could be a little bit different.
So as we look at the map of where there were streetcar routes in Minneapolis and St. Paul, it's pretty much the same map today as where we're focusing on our bus rapid transit improvements. And I think the thing that I always think about here is it's not about the vehicle. It's about the investments we make and the choices we make in how that vehicle fits into a community and how it serves. An example is that when people used to ride streetcars in Minneapolis, there was no accessible wheelchair ramp. You had to walk out into the middle of the street. You're walking in front of a car to get to this vehicle.
And maybe stepping up into something.
And stepping up in, exactly. Right. And so we've come a long way in thinking about how we can better serve and make better universal accessibility decisions in a transit system, whatever mode that is.
Yeah, I love that. I love the accessibility component of this. And I think that's something that excited me the most about BRT was like this like ground level situation where we're not waiting for a ramp to come out. And you know what I mean? And the other things that folks with disabilities face every day, and how do we make this accessible to the most amount of people? Jacob, would, you know, thinking about types of transit, would that kind of thing matter to you as a rider? Do you care if it's a light rail or a BRT or a streetcar?
Yeah, I think first and foremost, when I think of public transportation, I think of my everyday life experience. And one, I'm an executive director, so I have to give the caveat that, like, you know, 10 meetings in a day, if I'm traveling, I want a bus system that can take me where I need to go, and not be a bus system that is just for, like, you know, going out on the weekend, or a bus system that, you know, isn't meeting my everyday needs and my capacity. But I think particularly for young people who we work with, and, you know, when I got invited to be on this panel, I was like, well, young people are the experts of their own lived experience, so let's speak to them. And, you know, young people know what an incredible transportation system is. They see it on TikTok. They see it on social media. They may not know what a BRT means, but it was in every way they were like, duh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, absolutely, we need this. And so I think, you know, really recognizing that people have one, a perception, of what public transportation is, and half of those people have never taken it. And then there's a perception of like what people can reimagine their transportation system to be.
I love that point that, like, we have a lot of perceptions or what we think transit is. And I grew up here in Denver, and I have to say it was like almost not a stigmatizing thing, but like you took the bus if you didn't have a car. It wasn't like I took the bus because it was the most accessible thing, or it was better for the environment, or it got me where I needed to go. It was like, I don't have a car. This is how I have to get around. And I think changing that perception, that's interesting, thinking about how something like TikTok could maybe purvey those messages to young folks that it doesn't matter if it's a bus or a trolley or a BRT. It is what it is. It gets you where you need to go. And that's the most important part. But Jacob, I do want to kind of focus too on the fact you brought up young people. I'm thinking about young people using the BRT on Colfax, right? I think the most prominent school I think of is like East High School would be a good one. But there are schools all along this corridor. Do you think, what would a change to the Colfax bus becoming something like BRT mean for students?
Yeah, I think it's a change in culture and recognizing that oftentimes young people are taking the bus out of a necessity and out of a source of like, I need to plan my daily trip every day. And I know that if I take the bus, then I can only get out of school, go home. I don't have extracurricular activities that I can engage in. Like, this is how long it's going to take me to use transit and to, you know, to meet my everyday needs. And so I think it's, you know, BRT is going to change that culture to where young people can, you know, enhance their daily life and their activities beyond going to and from school. So really looking at public transportation as a source of their primary transportation instead of it being a source of this is just how I'm going to commute to and from school. So that's like engaging in multiple activities throughout the day. That's like meeting up with friends and taking BRT instead of just like I'm only taking BRT after
to get school to and from school,
mm-hmm.
for instance. Katie, what does youth ridership look like for you all?
So interesting that you make that point. a few years ago, more than a few years ago now, we worked with Minneapolis Public Schools to transition a large portion of their students from yellow buses that would do exactly what you said in the former case of get you to school in the morning, home from school in the afternoon, to giving them passes so that they can ride Metro Transit buses. What that did was unlock a tremendous amount of mobility, where now, if there's a bus that you have an option to take every 10 minutes, and that bus connects to the network of other buses that all run every 10 minutes, it means that you can stay after school for sports and then go do something with your friends and then go do these other things. And it provides that tremendous amount of freedom. And so we've really seen that PASS program, similar PASS programs with University of Minnesota students, be a big and growing portion of our ridership. And on average, we see that our riders tend to be much younger than our region as a whole. And those are the people that we're trying to reach and a big part of who is going to be the future of transit riders.
Spectrum Business works with small businesses nationwide. So we know that running your own business means doing it all. Marketing, sales, inventory, customer service, and more. Spectrum One for Business helps you keep it all connected for just $49.99 a month. Get fast, reliable internet, advanced Wi-Fi with Security Shield, and a free mobile line for one low price. Stay connected and do it all with Spectrum One for Business. Only $49.99 a month. Go to spectrum.com/business to learn more. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Is there such a thing as a traveler? Not a Delta. Because we know on one flight, Mike in 8C prefers reality TV to reality. So we provide more than 1,000 hours of in-flight entertainment. While on the flight after, 8C is occupied by Jen, whose favorite snack is tea. That's why we provide fast, free Delta Sync Wi-Fi available for SkyMiles members. Because at Delta, we know.
Refill?
Everyone flies their own way. Delta. Keep climbing. Free Wi-Fi available on most domestic flights. Terms of use apply.
We're kind of dancing around it, but Ryan, could you explain what makes BRT different in this sense? It runs more consistently. Like, I'm just thinking about someone who's like, I don't understand what the difference is between this and just a bus.
Well, I would say, you know, it's a system that in a lot of ways resembles light rail. So it has a lot of the benefits that light rail has. You know, you get real-time information about when the bus will be arriving. It has, in many cases, a platform. The experience of waiting for the bus is just much better. You know, you're in a space that feels more like a community improvement than
versus sort of an afterthought that sometimes bus stops can feel like.
You know, maybe a post with a sign and
no bench, covering.
If you're lucky, a pad of concrete to stand on.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's just it's a much better experience. And I think our goal is for all the BRTs really to be a service that you don't really have to think too hard about. Like, so as Katie mentioned, you can go out and just expect a bus to come every 10 minutes. And it opens up just a lot of different options and destinations for you. So it can really replace trips that you might otherwise be locked into having to use a car for.
It's a lot too, just like signals that we see in our regular environment. This is something I know I can take because it's always there. It's also a safer place for me. Maybe it's better lit. Maybe it does have a bench to sit on. These things that like subtly or, you know, sort of subconsciously contribute to whether or not we want to take that option if we might have another option. So that's so fascinating. Ryan, I wanted to actually ask you too about something that Katie talked about in her keynote, which was this sort of upzoning after BRT funding was secured. And I wonder, so that's talking about being able to build taller buildings around transit. Is that something that you all are talking about with like Colorado Boulevard and Federal, for instance?
It is. We are working with our partners really to look at the land use side of these projects and make sure that these investments are able to leverage greater improvements in development along these corridors, especially because a lot of these corridors are in underserved communities. So just for a good example, RTD recently got a $750,000 planning grant to do transit-oriented development from the FTA for Federal Boulevard, and that's to be done in conjunction with the BRT project development. So we're designing this BRT line on Federal Boulevard, and at the same time, thinking about what the future looks like from a development standpoint. And so I think we'll take a very similar approach on Colorado Boulevard and other future BRT projects.
That's cool because I live right off of Federal Boulevard, and a lot of it is very 50s era architecture, sort of setback, gas stations, strip malls, things like that. But it's such a used transit space. If there was more ways to live near it. Actually, I wonder that, Jacob, as a young person and someone that talks to young people a lot, as you're making maybe that transition from I don't know, high school to college or thinking about these things, how much does where you live and how do those things connect for you, transit and where you live?
Yeah, I think first is, you know, we work with 100% marginalized youth. And so, you know, marginalized youth have a very, you know, diverse amount of lived experience. And so I think the first thing that I think about is affordability. So right. Like oftentimes, you know, when you're having a bus, a multimodal transportation system, folks who most need it are not in those areas. Right. And young people are oftentimes seeing those inequities. And so being able to create a dynamic community where we have BRT that is like, you know, systemically embedded in our communities and people are like, this is what I deserve, but I can also live in a place that has grocery stores and other necessities is a beautiful aspect. And I appreciate Denver taking a deep look at that because we definitely don't want to perpetuate inequities where young people are realizing that in order for me to take a BRT system, I need to be in a high income community.
Katie, could you talk a little bit about that, what that conversation was like for you all in your city? Because I have to say, like, zoning issues here can be very contentious.
I think it comes down to options. In our region, like in so many places, we don't have enough homes for people. We need to build more homes. And if we don't allow those in places where there are services, there are transportation infrastructure elements in place, they're going to go somewhere else. They're going to go somewhere else in the region, maybe at the edge of a cornfield, where you need to own a car. And that's going to cost you at least $8,000 a year just to have a car to meet your basic needs. So really, I think having that conversation be framed around allowing people to locate in places where they're going to have the most choice and most opportunity is a really impactful way to approach the zoning question.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about the future of this for Denver and Colorado. Ryan, I'm thinking about, you've talked Colfax, Federal, Alameda, Colorado Boulevard. We've talked about the timelines, but could you talk a little bit about how these decisions were made? Because I don't know, all of them seem like we need to do it right now. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so I think, you know, these decisions were made based on the plans that I talked about earlier. So, you know, the RTD BRT feasibility study, Dr. Cog's Metro Vision 2050, Denver's Denver Moves transit plans. These are all planning studies that have identified where these investments should be made, and they're all built on and included community engagement, significant outreach and discussions with the public, with stakeholders on these corridors and in the city at large. And so in a lot of ways, the vision is one that has been developed over a period of years with the community. And as I mentioned, you know, many of these corridors are just, they've risen to the top. Everyone kind of agrees that these are the places where we need BRT and where it makes sense and fits with the investments that RTD has already made in the rail system and where we have a lot of crosstown bus ridership. And, you know, the goal is to have a system, a transit system that will be reliable and will be competitive with driving a car, you know, so that people can make the choice to take transit. And then also we have many, many corridors that have huge numbers of existing ridership. So Colfax, for example,
right?
You know, I think after the A-line, and if someone from RTD in the room wants to correct me, I think after the A-line is the highest highest ridership transit corridor in the state of Colorado. And so
it's like a no duh, of course.
Yeah. Why wouldn't you have a BRT on Colfax? Like it makes sense for the existing ridership, and then really to fit into the system to grow ridership. So that we can meet the goals that we have for our transportation system, you know, improving air quality, providing more transportation options, and overall improving affordability.
So you all think about this stuff all day, transit, the planning of it, but this is not something that necessarily the everyday person is thinking about. And sometimes I think these projects can be a hard sell. Like you said, it takes a long time from the beginning of the thought process to talking to the community, to figuring out the money, to all these things. And I think it can kind of be a hard sell. I don't know, Katie, do you want to talk a little bit about just like, how do you sell this dream of BRT to someone who's maybe never ridden a public transit system before?
Oh man, it's like I'm talking with my mom. No, I'm just kidding.
My mom is listening. And so if you could just address Brooke directly, sure, that would be great.
I honestly think that the biggest and most important thing that we did was build one line. Because when we were talking about BRT in the abstract, when we were talking about really nipping around the edges of what makes the bus experience good or bad, there were so many people who couldn't get behind that, couldn't visualize it. But as soon as we built one corridor and people could see and experience and ride it and say, oh yeah, I rode the A-Line to the State Fair. It was great. I get it. Then they became champions of building more of this. And then when we built the C-Line, I talked to somebody who said, oh, you A-lined my bus. That's great. Thank you.
It becomes a verb of how to do transit.
Making it a verb. I think honestly, you know, getting something out, getting something that people can really look and feel and understand what that means is so much more powerful than a PowerPoint slide or a set of bullet points about what it means in plannerese to make the bus more attractive and faster.
Sure. Jacob, I know you've kind of talked about like you work with folks who this is how they get around. Do you ever find that you do need to sell this idea though, that public transit is something worth investing in or caring about?
Yeah, I think it starts off with like just making it plain. Like make, you know, bus rapid transit, like if you just think about that, like what does that mean to someone?
Right.
First, I think the term comes out as like rapid. Like, okay, something is going to be fast. And the first thing that particularly young people think about is like things outside of the U.S. They're like, oh yeah, I know in another country I saw them, you know, doing a bullet train. So that's, you know, so thinking about what is the closest perception that they have towards a multimodal transportation system. And I think about my best friend. She has to hear me every day complain about things. And she works in the food industry. And she tells me, she's like, what's being done? Just tell me, how is this changing my life? What are the material conditions? And I think that's the making it, just like you said, just make it plain and get people engaged in knowing the change that they're going to see soon. Now, I do have questions about, like, you know, if this plan is not till far from now,
sure,
you know, what is the, what is our duty as practitioners in this space to bring people along between
keep
now
the
and
momentum
then?
Going and
yes.
Sure, keep people thinking about it. Brian, I'm thinking about I live off of federal. There's this weird dynamic where people speed and it's also congested. It's kind of insane and terrifying. And I'm thinking about introducing this idea of A, construction, right? People hate road construction. Oh my God, you're going to tear up my street. It's going to screw things up forever. How are you selling this to someone who is just like dedicated car driver? What's your like elevator pitch to somebody if you have, you know, a minute to say BRT is the way because?
Well, we're right at the beginning of that process, so
practice on us.
Yeah, if you have good pitches, like, no. So I would say, with Federal Boulevard, there are well documented speeding issues, and it's one of the most dangerous corridors in the metro region. I mean, there have been horrible pedestrian fatalities on that street, you know, and I think one of the big benefits of the BRT project is it also allows us to rethink some of the issues that are contributing to those specific crashes and you know, looking at intersection geometries and making crossings better for pedestrians. But I would say what BRT will do in transitioning a regular through lane to a bus-only lane that would allow right turns into properties at the curbside, which is the primary design for Federal Boulevard BRT, is that it will help better organize the street. It'll take the buses out of the congestion, which means that drivers may not get as frustrated when they get caught behind a bus. It also improves the speed of the bus. So I think the average speed of the bus on Federal Boulevard is like 8 or 10 miles an hour right now. And so the goal is to have the bus, again, move much faster and have it be much more reliable. And so when you think about how you just get more out of the existing system by not having it so weighed towards one single mode of transportation, it just opens up so many more options and better movement for people overall. And that's really the goal of the project.
Katie, I know that Denver is not unique in this problem, that like we love our cars and we also hate construction. What was that conversation like for you all? Like convincing that person that would say, I would never, the bus is too, Ryan just told us the bus is too slow.
Construction is hard anywhere.
Right.
And construction is happening in a lot of places in my hometown right now. And we are doing our best to communicate with people about why it's happening, to do our very best and mean it, that we're making it take as little time as possible and that the benefits are going to be real and tangible for not just bus riders, but for pedestrians, for people who bike, for people who drive. And I think a big part of that is something we've had a lot of success in Minneapolis, which is partnering with other agencies, with cities, with counties, with state DOT, who want to make improvements at the same time so that we bundle all these things together. And in doing so, we're not just saying that there's one set of construction impacts and then it's over, but we're also saying, and then the benefit is not just a transit benefit. It is truly a multimodal benefit that helps us get toward our climate goals, toward our affordability goals, toward our transportation goals.
The most exciting part of a vacation stay at a home rental? Easy. It's being greeted upon arrival with a rusted lockbox affixed to the underside of a stranger's condo. Yeah, you simply twist knobs, click gears, jiggle it, and then rip it off its moorings, and voila! Your prize is a key to a questionable home rental and maybe tetanus. When you just want to get your vacation started by actually getting into your room, it matters where you stay. At Hilton, we deliver your key right to your phone on the Hilton Honors app. Hilton for the stay.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
So I want to close with this thought of sort of the future. And I have to say, again, Ryan, I'm looking at the projected timelines for these projects. And what's incredible to me is it actually is sooner than we think it's going to be, right? It feels like 2030, what? But that's like not that far away. Like my son is almost 3. So by the time he's a teenager, this could be just his second nature of how he gets around. And so I guess, Jacob, what do you think about, or what do you think a Denver of the future looks like for young people when we have all these BRT lines all over the city?
Yeah, I envision a generation where young people are not watching TV and the first thing that they, well, they're not watching TV right now, but you know.
they're watching TikTok, it's fine.
They're watching TikTok, but they have, you know, they grew up in a society where, you know, the first thing that they hear about is drive safe, drive safe, drive safe, drive safe, you know? So it's like, yes, you need to drive safe. Not saying that teen driving crashes are not increasing, because they absolutely are, but how can we transform that conversation where young people are growing up in our transportation system and saying, yeah, that's all I do is take the bus. Like, I take the bus everywhere. I'm with my family. And so I think it's our duty to, you know, reimagine and like bring people along right now, like starting next week, and getting young people to recognize what the future of their transportation system can look like.
Yeah, I love that. I love the optimism here, but I also just love thinking about the next generation of folks that may think completely differently about how what they do when they step out their front door. Well, this was so wonderful, you all. Katie, Ryan, Jacob, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Stuart, what's up now? What do I do? I'm just kidding. I'm not trying to make you run.
We have some time for questions.
Sure. Yeah.
If there are from the audience.
Absolutely.
Jeannie Robb.
Thank you. The panel was very good. I had a question for Katie that didn't occur to me until the panel started and we started talking about Colfax. Were there issues on some of the lines that you put in about transferring traffic to nearby streets, other bordering arterials or collectors, and did that materialize?
So in our first couple of corridors, we did not have bus lanes really at all. But we did do a lot of study, and our partners led study of the traffic impacts just from the bus stopping in a different location, stopping in the travel lane versus pulling off to the side like it had before. And ultimately, those studies found that traffic was unaffected by and large by those things, and any fears about spillover into other corridors were not materializing. As we look toward those future projects where we are going to have more bus lanes, we certainly are going to be working with our partners to identify what those effects will be. But we're also doing a lot of modeling and making decisions based on those models that say we don't really expect that to be a large issue. So, you know, it's certainly something that as we think about communicating and talking about what the benefit is and what those impacts are, we want to be really mindful of. But thus far, it has not risen as a major, major concern for us.
I want to piggyback off that for you, Ryan, because you're talking about, when you say like Collector Road, the streets just off to, like off of Colfax, it would be like 13th and 14th one way and 16th and 17th the other way. And this is something that we've heard from our listeners too, for sure, is like, it's just going to clog those streets because people don't want to be on the road where they don't have as much space as they did before because the BRT line is taking up too much space or whatever. So how did you all address that when, I mean, you're in the construction process already. What was that conversation like?
Well, I was not really a part of the conversation on Colfax, but I can tell you, certainly, you know, I think the Colfax team has been working with the community on those issues. For federal and Colorado, what we're doing now is really doing those studies and modeling the impacts to try to understand, you know, where might there be diversion? You know, where would people choose to drive other than federal if we make these changes, and so, or Colorado for that matter. And so I think, you know, we understand and have a general consensus on what the BRT design from an operations perspective will look like on federal. For Colorado, I think we're gonna start with determining what that alignment would look like in tandem with doing that those traffic studies to understand, you know, what would be the impacts associated with each option, and then really have a community discussion about it.
And Katie, I like how you said earlier, like, we have to do one. We have to make one so you can see how you would actually use it or how it would impact things. So Colfax might just be that one we learn from.
Oh, Brandon.
Oh. I have a question for Katie. So I'm really excited to hear about all of the great things that are happening in the Twin Cities. And I was curious that to hear what your community engagement strategy was before the launching of the A-Line. As you mentioned in your presentation, there was a lot of popularity and excitement about light rail. And so how were you able to get community support to change directions to more the BRT focus?
So our community engagement around all of our BRT projects starts really early. It starts in talking about exactly what we've been talking about on this stage, which is what are the goals, what are we trying to do, and engaging communities around what are the problems that they encounter in their daily experience. So that translates into how we define the plans for these corridors, where stations go. We have a lot of community engagement that goes into that, and especially into how exactly are we changing the street? How are we fitting a station in? How does the bus going to stop versus how it does today? So, you know, we really view that as a long-term relationship that starts early and carries through into construction, and we're communicating early and often about what is happening during construction, so that then when we're getting ready to open something, people have been brought along that entire time, and you know, they know who the community outreach coordinator on this project is. They've talked with them probably. They've knocked on their door several times. And it becomes really a focal point. So that's kind of that large arc to the strategy. And I think the other piece is really focusing in on who are the riders today. And what a lot of times when we're talking about these new improvements, people think we're attracting new people to ride transit, which we are. But I think it is so critical that we are really focused on the people who are riding today are going to be the people who benefit from these improvements, in addition to welcoming in a much bigger tent of people to ride transit. So not losing sight of that is another really important aspect of engagement that I think is critical to these projects.
Great.
I think we got Tori. Oh, Frank. We've had Frank on the show. Frank just basically is like on the show all the time. We love you, Frank. I'm ready for your question, Frank.
The tone was a little odd, but
I know. I'm sorry. That sounded aggressive. I appreciate. We're both lovers of Colfax. I'm with you,
yeah.
Frank.
So yeah, I have a tendency to think and talk about Colfax a fair amount. But my question is. Well, I also had a comment too about like kind of like the overflow of streets. Is that like there's, and it's a tough thing, is that like what if you did nothing, right? You know, I think the question is like, well, what would 13,000 more cars on the road do to both Colfax and the side streets? It would be more. But when you were talking about storytelling, I think you all talked about storytelling in one way or another, and I kind of wanted to dig into that a little bit deeper of like how you can tell really effective stories, especially from the user's perspective. I'll use myself as an example. A friend lent me a car, and I used it to go to the Cherry Creek shopping mall around the holidays and had a horrible time driving and parking and just so aggravated. And the next day, I got on the 15, and people were slapping each other on the back and talking. I haven't seen you for a year, right? There was just like all this. There was a community on the bus. And for the most part, people who don't ride the bus don't necessarily experience that. Or the one time they did and they saw something weird, they tell that for the next 10 years, you know, a story. So, but I feel like I've had a hard time figuring out how do you get the riders to the public meeting? Do you go to bus stops and say, young fellow, how would you like to come to a community meeting tomorrow night and talk about your experience on the bus? How do you really activate and mobilize and get people, users involved to tell their stories?
That is a great question. And I think, what we find is that it's most important to go to our riders to get their voices and to count their experiences when their voices can't come to the table because they're busy living their lives. So I think, you know, a really big piece of this comes back to using data that we do have available and augmenting that with authentic community engagement that goes to people where they are, at bus stops, at destinations along those corridors at different times of day, and not asking them to come to us. When you talk about just generally speaking, I think we discount the number of people and the experiences of people on buses because we see a bus going down the street and we think, okay, there's a bus, it's next to a car. But one thing we've also seen to be a very powerful narrative is that a bus may just cause 2% of traffic in a corridor, but it's carrying 20, 30, 40% of the people moving through that space. So kind of taking the roof off the bus and letting people see and understand how many people are affected by a single street design decision or a single project.
Hello. So I heard about transit-oriented development, and I just wanted to ask about balancing, making sure we have access to multimodal options while maintaining the character and heart and soul of a neighborhood without taking that away, because I've seen construction just completely turn an area around and just don't even recognize it. So how do you balance accessibility, but with also just, again, that local neighborhood flair or just heart?
Well, I think you have to really lean into a community-driven process. You need to start at the beginning, as Katie mentioned, and really, you know, bring the community along through the process and include them in the development of the project. I mean, I think that's really the most important thing at a foundational level. And then to the last question, like getting out in the community and meeting people where they are in their everyday lives, not just, you know, having a public meeting and throwing some notifications on Facebook and, you know, Twitter X, whatever you call it these days. You really need to get out and talk to people. And that's something that we've really been trying to do with Federal Boulevard and we'll be doing with Colorado. We've been doing this Colorado Boulevard corridor study, kind of anticipation of the BRT project. And we got on the number 40 and talked to people on the number 40 from north to south and, you know, walked up and down the corridor and talked to people on their bikes and really tried to understand, like, what is the daily experience of using these services and what would you like to see improved? And, you know, starting with that information and building from there, I think, is really tantamount to having successful projects.
I would also add to that and say that I think there's agreed, community engagement is extremely important, but oftentimes the folks that are using our public transportation system, like, they have the power within them, but they don't have access to the power to make those structural changes. And so I think it also, needs to happen, and that recognition needs to happen, but also making, you know, temporary changes that allow people to see the material change that can happen. So that includes having open streets where people are like, oh, wait, you know, there's open streets available. Let me take the bus, you know, since the street's already open. Or that's tactical urbanism, or that is like looking at having, you know, campaigns that center buses instead of like everyone envisioning automobiles as the main form of transportation. So I think just being keenly aware of, like, if we're going to engage the community in reimagining their own community, recognizing that that has to be coupled with, you know, us advocating for systemic change so people can see the power that they have.
Thank you. All right. Question for you, Katie. I think Minneapolis, you said, has 5 BRT lines in place and a bunch more coming. So I'm really curious about if you can talk about the network effect, because I think that's one of the big opportunities, and especially if you look at like the planned BRT corridors in Denver. And I also want to make a quick plug, Ryan, for the Spear-Leedsdale-Parker corridor, because that literally, because it goes diagonal, it literally connects every BRT corridor except for one. And it connects a bunch of light rail. So that thing could really weave stuff together. And if we can just bump that up the list, I think that'd be great.
Can you make that happen, Ryan? Thanks.
The network effect. I'm so glad you phrased your question in that way, because that is exactly how we are talking about this. We're not building a collection of one-off lines. We're building a network that people can plan their lives around. And that means having that fast, frequent all-day service across a growing, you know, getting to look like a grid. With the B line that we're going to open next year, that is similar, it sounds like, to this corridor, where it's going to connect 8 of our existing and planned metro lines. It's going to open up a lot of connectivity. We have another line that we're starting planning on now that is going to open up a new network connection that doesn't exist today to kind of proliferate that east-west versus radial into our downtowns method of travel that allows people, again, to get more places, do it more reliably, and live without a car.
Angie.
Thank you. This is a question, I think, for both Ryan and Katie. The community outreach you talk about, like on the 40, is really exciting to me. Do you have, when you get on the bus, people who speak Spanish? Because in those corridors, we have such a large Latino population. How are you dealing with the cultural diversity on that?
Yes, we are bringing interpreters with us when we do these types of outreach. So on the 40, we had a staff member who spoke Spanish, who's fluent in Spanish. And then actually for Federal Boulevard, we've been doing outreach at public libraries, recreation centers, Front Range Community College. And in some of these locations, we've been bringing Vietnamese speakers because there's a large Vietnamese-speaking population, especially on South Federal. And so really trying to reach people where they are and then communicate in the best way possible is a huge goal of ours for these projects.
And I'll add to that, that in the matter of advancing our projects, one of our first steps is to develop an engagement plan. And one of the steps in that engagement plan is to understand which languages are most spoken in the corridors that we're working in. The big three in Minneapolis tend to be Somali, Spanish, and Hmong. And so generally, most of our materials are translated into that language. We also have a growing practice that we're continuing to work on, because this is something we can always do better at, in directly contracting with community groups who are not just interpreters, but are ambassadors into those communities so that we can better reach them where they are versus relying only on our staff or only on translated materials to make that happen.
Okay, yes, Bill.
This is mainly for Ryan. Colfax corridor, great to have the project that Katie recommended as a leader. And now we're looking at Federal, Colorado, and there's others. And speaking from the territory of transportation solutions, the Leedsdale Spear Boulevard corridor seems tempting. What are the characteristics of the various corridors that cause the priority that they're done on in timing?
That's a very good question. So I will say that I did not have a hand in prioritizing which projects went first. Although I think generally speaking, if you look at the RTD BRT feasibility study, it kind of has some good metrics around what existing ridership is and what the projected ridership would be. Competitiveness for federal grants. You know, I spoke earlier about having this fairly large pot of state funds. And so just thinking about, you know, the opportunity to leverage a lot of the funding that's come online with the recent transportation infrastructure bill and trying to be as competitive as possible. The ones that we are pursuing, I think, fit that bill. And so, but to the point of like actually getting some projects in the ground and then building that momentum towards a greater network, I think once we have Colfax done, once federal is developed and under construction, once we get going and are really in the thick of things with Colorado, I think these opportunities are going to start to reveal themselves and we'll have better movement towards that network.
Well, I would like to thank Bree and all the panelists for a very excellent discussion. Thank you all for sticking it out to the end. I would like to thank DU for hosting us this year in this beautiful space. So thanks for that. And with that, we're done.
That's all for today here on CityCast Denver. Our producers this week were Paul Caroli, Olivia Jewel Love, Dylan Brogan, and A.K. Al Momin. Peyton Garcia writes our morning newsletter, Hey Denver, and I'm Bree Davies, your host. Our music is by Los Mogachetes with additional mixing by Tyler Lindgren. If you haven't already, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, follow us on Instagram at CityCast Denver, and tell your future BRT driver about us next time you see them. You can sign up for our daily newsletter and learn more about us at denver.citycast.fm. See you next week.